What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, DJs, studio artists, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 a month, and even their top tier is just $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners and viewers 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. That link will give you 30% off that first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and cannot thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Puff Coffee. Puff is one of my favorite coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. They've got a location off 28th and Stark in Southeast. Their coffee is delicious and everyone that works there is always super friendly. I had the pleasure of staying in their neighborhood for a month or so, and it was just a real treat to have this as my neighborhood coffee shop for a bit. And now I find myself going out of my way to get over there and get some coffee. Puff Coffee was started by the founder of Stumptown Coffee, and they are making small batch coffee roasted daily here in Portland. Their mission: to find, roast, and deliver the most delicious coffees anywhere. Their small batch process means that they get to keep things interesting with experimental blends and single origin gems while always keeping the classics on deck. They've got a variety of beans to choose from, and if you're not in the Portland area, you can order their small batch coffee straight to your home through their website. And you can use the coupon code DANCABLE, all one word, for 20% off a coffee subscription. Links for Puff Coffee will be in the episode notes. Big thanks to Puff for supporting the show and for their amazing small batch coffee. Now let's get into the episode. What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so, and that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, giving it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Maybe you're watching on YouTube. You can click subscribe there and check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping every first of the month. 40 tracks and pretty spread out genre-wise. Just a snapshot of what I'm listening to throughout the month. Some music I've seen recently and just some things that are making it into my DJ sets. So links for those are in the episode notes. Hope everybody is doing well out there. Stoked to get into episode 405 of the podcast with Seattle-based band Byland. It was great to have Allie and Jake in the studio a couple months back while they were coming through Portland, as Byland was supporting the Bones of J.R. Jones on tour. And we got to hang out and do the podcast. It's a very cool band dynamic between Allie and Jake, who make up this Byland project. Ali is the singer and composes the music, but when it comes to the lyrics, it's a collaborative process between she and her romantic and creative partner, Jake. Jake doesn't play an instrument, so he's removed from the live show experience, but he plays a huge role in bringing these songs together with his lyrical writing. We dive into that process quite a bit during this conversation, so you'll further understand what that dynamic looks like. And just really enjoyed chatting with the both of them about that. Big congrats to Byland. They just dropped a brand new record on Friday. It's called Heavy for a While. It's a great record that I've had the pleasure of listening to for the past couple months, and it is now available wherever you stream music or on vinyl. I got one of those sweet vinyls. It comes on like this really nice white vinyl. Beautiful tunes. We talk about the record during this chat as well, and feature some of the music from that. And I'll make sure to put the links in the episode notes so you can find all things Byland and grab one of those vinyls if you want to. And they've also got a bunch of live shows happening in support of this record up and down the West Coast. So those dates will be in the episode notes as well. But you can put May 3rd on your calendar if you are in Portland, Oregon. I had the pleasure of putting together Byland's Portland show coming up and got to curate this one. And Alexis Mahler is going to be opening up the night. And then also a former guest of the podcast, a Junior Bloomer, is going to be headlining that night and also celebrating a brand new single. So it's going to be a great show. Byland is doing the full band set, which I have not gotten to see live. When they last came through town, it was just a solo set from Ali. So I'm really excited to see the full band. So that's on May 3rd over at Alberta Street Pub. And with all that, we are going to get into this thing. Episode 405 with Byland from Seattle. And to kick off the episode, we are going to play one of my favorite tracks from that new record, Heavy for a While. And this one is called Lean In. Let's do the damn thing.
I can hear the sound through the walls, and I'm on the outside. No.
That's amazing.
They sometimes have like pianos in there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So 400 episodes?
We are past the 400 mark now. Like, wow. When this comes out, we will be 400 and beyond. You'll probably be like, I don't know, 405 or 404, somewhere in that realm.
Hell,
so
yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm stoked to have like this video element to it. But yeah, stoked to chat with y'all about this Byland music that I've you know, that you guys put me on to and found out about, I guess. Like, I don't know,
we forced ourselves upon you.
No, happy that it worked out that you knew Isabeau and reached out, like got connected in that way. And I've been listening to the music a lot since, and
thanks.
Been getting to listen to this new record, you know, the sneak peek at the at the new record, which seems like maybe some of these songs have been done for a while.
Yeah,
is that accurate?
Yes.
From that SoundCloud link you sent me, I was
oh
like,
my gosh, does it have a date on it?
I think it has a date for like when songs had been maybe uploaded.
Was oh it like yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are later than others, right?
Yeah. We've been sitting on it for a while.
Yeah, so I'm excited to hear about, you know, where the new record comes from, and and all that, and it was great to see you play last night.
Thanks.
It's always like really nice, I feel like, to get a sense of what the live show vibe is, especially a solo set.
Yeah.
I think is a cool way to get to know somebody's music and how they operate in the live space without a band.
Yeah. Very vulnerable.
Yeah. Does that feel completely different to you when you're performing solo versus performing with a band behind you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's awesome. It's like a great way to just be so vulnerable and out there. And I think like it's very, very different than being with a band. I definitely think that I hide behind my band sometimes. Like I just know them and trust them so much.
Yeah.
And it's easy to just kind of float in, but when you're by yourself, there's nobody to lean on.
Yeah,
it's just yourself. And I think at this point, like, I do really trust myself, and I love what I'm singing. I love the songs that I get to perform, and I believe in them so much. So it's like awesome. I love it. I feel like so happy I get to do it.
What is there maybe some freedom in playing the solo set though as well? Like, you don't have this band, so you can kind of maybe divert from the plan
100% differently. I mean, I think like there's just so much spaciousness with a solo set that it's like easy to have the tendency to just like fill space. But if you just like let it go, like last night I accidentally pushed my mute pedal instead of my overdrive, and I mean, I think there's just like some spaciousness, and that's like memorable, and I think those moments, you're kind of just up there raw, and I remember that moment forever. It's very like vulnerable, and I'm so grateful for all those people that were in the room that were there with me experiencing it, and yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. And you also played a cover last night.
Yeah.
Played a Nirvana song, which is very rad. I'm curious, like, why do you like to include maybe a cover in a set? And also, what is the approach to like covering something so iconic and something so well known? You know, I feel like a pretty bold choice.
Yeah. I mean, I think that song stands on its own. Like, it's obviously the version that people know it best is like pretty rockin'. It's a very different approach than like what I took. So I think it's an honor to be able to like play a song like that, that is itself just a good song. Like, it's a good song. You know, it doesn't rely on like the recording or all the instrumentation. Like, just, I mean, rest in peace, Kurt Cobain. Like, it's just, it's a good ass song.
Yeah.
And I think what drew me to it was the chords. I think like they're just, it's a really interesting chord progression, and he's a legend in Seattle, and I feel like so happy to be in Seattle. So
pay homage to that a little bit. Yeah. Is it difficult to find your own voicing for a song like that, or does it pretty naturally come through like whatever the Byland filter is, or whatever the Alley filter is?
I don't know. Honestly, I brought it to my our producer, Nate Iacino. He we were just talking about music one day, and he was like, God, I just love, like, have you really dove into Lithium? Like, this is a good ass song. And honestly, like, my upbringing, like, I didn't grow up listening to music like that. I grew up listening to church music.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I think, like, it was probably one of my first times, like, really listening to the lyrics and hearing it. And I was, like, completely just, like, enthralled.
Yeah.
So when I first started playing it, like, on piano, it was like pretty interesting to be able to sing something like I'm so horny. Like, I don't think that when you listen to that song, like, I'm, you're so listening happy to all those lyrics, but I don't know. What did Nate say about that song?
Yeah, I think it's cool that like a lot of people know the Nirvana for the sound and everything, but really like the reason that they like were what they were was like the vulnerability And I think that that's one of the cool things about stripping the song down is a lot of people have come up and said, like, yeah, I never noticed all the words. Like,
yeah.
And that's, like, I think kind of, yeah, to strip some of the sound back and do it like Ellie's been doing it is, like, it feels really cool, and it feels like kind of bringing it into a different world that, like, highlights what it was that, like, made Nirvana... like the vulnerability was,
yeah,
like,
for sure,
yeah, for him to be like to share and be vulnerable like that was like punk, was counterculture, was
absolutely.
Was not
at the time.
Yeah.
And like the version that you're doing definitely like shifts the focus when you are playing just yourself on the keys,
yeah.
You know, there is just kind of that vocal to hang,
yeah,
on to, so you really are like paying attention to the lyrics differently.
Yeah.
And I thought it feels like you're delivering it in such a different way, you know, so it is like a new version of it, which is cool. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't, I don't know, sometimes you hear a cover and it feels just like, oh yeah, this is the song.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It felt like your own take.
Thanks.
You know, like whether you like spent a lot of time figuring that out or if that's just like naturally like what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like learning the song on piano.
Yeah.
And I was thinking in my mind, I wanted like the, you know, when he's like, yeah, like I was thinking like, oh, that'd be sweet to have like our lead player like play a sick line there or something. But then I was like, all I have is my piano, so I just did the melody on the piano, and I think like it's like really great just as it is.
Yeah. What do you feel like you learned from learning a cover?
That's a great question.
Like, do you feel like you learned something about songwriting when you break down someone else's song?
Yeah, I mean, like if you listen to the chord structure of Lithium, like it's like he's changing keys like in the middle of a verse, so it's like very fun to play. It's not easy at all. Like, I think some of these songs that we grew up listening to and just like we know the melody like the back of our hand, I think that we don't realize that it's actually like a very technical song, you know, like,
yeah,
when we're switching keys in the middle of a song, we just know it that way, but whoever wrote it like chose to do that, so
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you also like the element of playing something that's maybe familiar to the audience if you're playing a set where you maybe a majority of the people in the room don't know your music?
Most likely that, yes. what was the question?
Just like, I don't know. Does that feel like, is that a part of the reason maybe to include a cover to like play something a little,
yeah,
familiar?
Yeah. I mean, like even Lithium, like most of the people still don't know what the song is until I'm singing like I Killed You, you know, like the ending is when they're like, oh my God, it's Lithium, like, or it's Nirvana, you know, and people come up to me afterwards and I think that's like usually the one that they remember, which is awesome. yeah, but I think it like brings people in. It's an invitation to like lean in.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's so far awesome to play and people are responding well and like it. So
is your mindset for doing an opening set a lot different than maybe a headline set?
For sure. Yeah.
What do you feel like the thought process is, or how maybe the approach is different?
Yeah, I mean, for these shows, like I'm opening for the Bones of J.R. Jones, and he's like he's a rock star, you know? So like his set is so upbeat. It's so
high energy.
And I think that, I mean, there's something to say, like, I'm not going to change my whole thing just to, I mean, I am what I am and I am here to give what I have to give. So I think, yeah, I mean, I'll just say it's tough, like, to figure that out. Like, I'm here to support the Bones of J.R. Jones. Like, I think he's amazing. And
yeah.
So, I'm playing 35 minutes and I'm kind of warming up the crowd is my hope, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, are you playing, I don't know, is because maybe a lot of people are unfamiliar with the music, is it kind of nice that you feel like you can play the entire Byland catalog and everything is like kind of new to people, so it doesn't necessarily matter if you're like playing older songs or newer songs?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've just chosen the ones that I think like really connect with people.
Yeah.
And that I feel comfortable playing by myself.
Yeah, I would imagine that's like got to be a part of the consideration that when you're making these songs on a record, it's usually with a band and you know, you have all this production. Are you ever thinking about that when you're making a record of like how will these songs translate to a solo set? Because I would imagine that's like a pretty big part of what you're doing still, of like maybe is it like a 50-50 split of playing full band versus kind of solo sets?
Yeah.
Do you have something to say?
Well, yeah, I was going to say for like as far as taking that thought process into consideration when making the music, I think that, when we go into the studio, we start with like, our producer likes really shitty first drafts, not overproduced at all. So I think we start with Ali on a single instrument, either piano or guitar, and a vocal just recorded on an iPhone. And that's like really how all the songs start, and like with the intention of not having them depend on the production to be what they are.
If so it's not good, like in that version, like, we're not going to record it.
Yeah.
Like, we're not just going to add a bunch of shit to, like, make it, like, cool, you
if
know?
If the song can't stand alone.
Yeah, if it can't stand alone. It's, like, often, like, even that's, I think, why we love working with Nate is, like, I mean, we're to this point where we'll bring a song and he's, like, let's just keep reworking it. Like, let's write a better song. You know? And it's, like, great. I feel like that's pushed us so much. And I think what we've made now is the best thing that we've ever made. Truly. Yeah. Like, we started from just a simple melody, lyrics, and like this is a collaboration between Jake and I. Like, he writes a lot of the lyrics and I write the melody, and it's I think like working well.
Yeah, definitely. Let's dial it back. You mentioned growing up you listened to like a lot of religious music.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
How would you put it, Ali?
I mean, I won't say it's all bad. Like, that's where I learned how to be on stage and not die. Like, it's I'll say this, like, my first moments with music, like where we met each other, was I grew up in New Mexico in the East Mountains, east of Albuquerque and Tijeras.
Okay.
And
small town stuff.
Very small.
Okay.
And then we were like, you can drive to Albuquerque like within like 20 minutes, but we grew up like there's 5 kids in my family. My parents owned a sign business, and I lived on Route 66. So we had like chickens and a goat, homeschooled, all the stuff. But my mom would like steal money out of the grocery budget to like afford a piano lesson for me here and there. And I remember my first one, I was like, my feet couldn't even touch the ground. And this was a huge grand piano. And I, you know, I'm just like so nervous. But my piano teacher, she looks at me and she just goes, honey, like, how are you feeling right now? Like, can you try to like identify an emotion? And why don't you find one key on the piano that helps you express that emotion? And then let's find another key. And let's start creating a story with these feelings that you're expressing. And that's how I really first got introduced to music. And I feel like that's like stuck with me so much, just that emotion approach, and having it, you know, you're like partnering with your instrument. And so thanks, Mom. Yeah.
Did you gravitate towards music on your own, or was it something that your mom kind of pushed you towards the piano lessons?
No, I mean, my grandparents like had like a, I don't even know what it was, like a humongous piece of equipment, but it was like an old organ thing.
Okay.
And I was definitely like playing that, and while all the rest of the kids were like watching TV and stuff. So I always like wanted to play music, and I was singing harmony like as soon as I could open my mouth.
So even from being a young kid, though, it felt like this very emotional thing for you.
Yeah, I mean, I did listen to like a lot of religious music, but my dad, he was a hippie, so he loved like, I mean, we had like Amy Grant and Keith Green and Johnny Cash and Tom Petty and like so many of the folk gods, you know, like so yeah, I mean, I was standing on top of the table singing with like a carrot, you know.
Yeah, I guess I was asking you if it felt like emotional from the jump, just because listening to the music and then seeing you play last night, it feels like it comes from a heavy place, like you're processing a lot.
Yeah,
but also there's this added element of Jake, you writing lyrics, which is like this really interesting thing to me that I definitely want to dive into, of like what that creative dynamic like really looks like. But yeah, did it always feel like pretty comfortable for you, Allie, to get up in front of a crowd of people and express yourself in this way?
Yeah, I mean, that's the gig. It's like awesome to be able to share something that you've created, and when it connects with people, that's a bonus. But yeah, I feel like a lot of it, like, I'm not doing it really for like other people. Like it's truly like a gift. Like music has been a gift to me, like a safe place to be able to process what you're saying. And yeah, I don't know where I'd be without it, truly.
Yeah, last night you said music is magic.
Music is magic.
And I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, like, what is magical about it to you? Like, what is that element of magic, do you think, finds its way through the music?
I mean, it's like a language, and I mean, art in general, like, is so important. It's like how we express everything that's inside of us. I don't know. That's a really good question. I think that it makes me emotional, like, thinking about music. It's truly been there for me always. Like, music has been one of my best friend. Like,
yeah,
when I'm feeling something, it's the first place that I turn to express and like process. So, yeah, I think, again, I just don't know where I would be without it. Yeah.
Did songwriting start from a pretty early age for you?
No, not at all. Like, I'll say this, like, my dad was a pastor in like the inner city of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I got to have the opportunity to like be a worship leader when I was 12 years old, just because pastor's kid privilege. Yeah. But I the songs that we were singing were all about one thing, and there wasn't like a lot of value put on any like individuality, I would say, within that environment. So we were singing literally the same songs like every single week.
Yeah, you were just like learning a lot of worship songs then.
Yeah,
you weren't spending too much time like crafting your own songs.
No, I didn't ever think that I would be outside of that environment, like, ever.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when do you start songwriting, and when does that all unfold?
Yeah, I mean, when I was 18, I moved from New Mexico to Washington by myself, like, for Bible college.
Okay.
And I met Jake there, and yeah, long story short, we've actually been married for 10 years. And we started writing music together pretty early on, I would say, like, maybe in 2015 or so. And Jake he writes a lot. Like, in the car, he's like, Jake is incredible about writing, like, to a subject. Like, he's like, wow, I love this idea. Like, I'm going to write about this idea.
Okay.
And that is completely the opposite of how I write. But I think that he had a bunch of, I don't know, do you want to jump in? Like, honestly, our whole first record, Jake and I wrote and produced and, like, did it all in our closet. in Seattle.
This is Gray?
No, this is the one before that.
There's a previous record.
There's a previous record that's not anywhere now.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm super proud of it still.
College closet?
Yeah.
Status?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jake, talk to me about what your music background is. And, yeah, like when you started getting interested or falling in love with music.
Yeah, I mean, I had a similar background with, like, only listening to religious music, not having a ton of exposure to anything else. But yeah, I used to like to write long before I ever met Ali, just essentially poetry.
Okay.
I just enjoyed writing, and I didn't really have a reason for doing it or a planned outlet or anything.
Never like actually songwriting, like with an instrument, just always just writing.
Just writing, like, yeah.
Poetry I've never, or lyrics of some in some form.
Yeah, I've like tried to start to learn to play the guitar or piano, but never stuck with it. But yeah, I've always enjoyed writing.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. And then when we, shortly after we got married, we started messing with some songs together and like didn't know where we were gonna go with it or whatever. But yeah, now it's like pretty fun to be like in music but not a musician per se.
Yeah,
but like I feel like one thing that's kind of like neat that we've figured out along the way is like I think when I first started writing it was very like linear and like iambic pentameter, like very like cheesy melodies basically. But it's cool to like write something that like works simply and then have Ali put a very unique melody to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of times I'll write like the lyrics and then give them to Ali without any context of the melody that I have in my head for them. So it's kind of neat to like then once she comes up with something like comparing and kind of finding the best melody between. But yeah, it's definitely super collaborative. I think that like on Heavy for a While, I think almost, yeah, some are all my lyrics, some are all Ali's, but I think a lot of them are just full collaboration. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Why do you think you gravitated towards writing?
I don't know. I think that like, yeah, I couldn't tell you. It's just something that I did. I've never been big on journaling or anything like that. I don't know why exactly I enjoyed writing, but it just like kind of came naturally and was like, yeah, like I said, wasn't planning on having it turn into music or anything. It's just something I had fun doing.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're thinking about it a lot differently now?
Yeah.
That it is being applied to music, that you've like learned some things that help make it work for what Ali is doing musically now?
Yeah, for sure. It's like, yeah, I'm definitely, I like have a note on my phone that's a mile long that's just like little chunks of lines. And yeah, I feel like as far as thinking about it differently, trying to be less linear about it and more like have it like what's the phrase, like show don't tell, like the having it like be less on the nose or less like and like just when I hear a phrase or like I'll pull out my phone at a restaurant and just like having writing be a lifestyle thing, that it's something that we're always doing. We'll be in the car and Ali will start like vocalizing and then like we'll get something. And I like Jeff Tweedy calls it mini miracles. Anytime you like write something here and you hear a melody here and they fit together.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
So definitely a lifestyle thing, just the writing piece now.
You're just that dude who's just like constantly pulling out his phone to like write notes and just like random lines.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's becoming like more of that too, where you're able to, since you're not thinking about it so much like in a linear sense of being able to, oh, I wrote this piece like 2 weeks ago and this little chunk came 2 months later, or like, and being able to like piece those things together, even if they don't feel like they naturally like were meant to be together.
Yeah it's definitely like, yeah, when I first started writing, it would be like start a song, finish a song, I feel like it's a very different process to like categorize things by like emotion rather than categorize them by topic or time frame, or it's a different approach, but it like feels right when it all comes together. And there definitely is like at the tail end of writing a song the part where it's just work like it's just making it, finishing it, and sitting down has to be that more linear approach.
Yeah, the balance seems like it's there though, as far as what you're talking about is you know, maintaining some mystery to what the thing is like about, you know. It feels like there's something to attach to, but you don't know exactly what that thing is. It like leaves the room for interpretation.
Yeah, you don't want to tell people how to feel. Like,
yeah, but it is hard to, I feel like early on, to not be doing something so on the nose. Mm-hmm. Like I did a lot of writing growing up and songwriting, and you know, it was very like on the nose. And now I'm so like turned off by that most of the time. I think it works in certain cases, you know, but it's yeah, I feel like that's part of the growing pains of writing, for sure.
Yeah.
Allie, I'm curious. I'm always curious about this when someone is seeing lyrics that they haven't written themselves. Mm-hmm. Is it ever difficult to maybe sing Jake's lyrics with the same conviction from the jump that maybe you have for something that you wrote on your own?
I don't know. I think like because it's such a collaboration, every song that we've written is like we're both doing it together. So I think like by the end, it feels like it's both of our song. And yeah, but I will say like there's one song on the record. We start off the whole record heavy for a while for the song that I wrote about exactly how I was feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
And just like let it be that moment, and it helped me process it and then like move on, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that song maybe, yeah, for sure, is like very, very dear to me, and I sing it differently. But I don't know, every song is just so different and magic.
Or do you feel like maybe the songs Jake is writing lyrically bring out something different in you?
Yeah. I mean, if like this song Two Circles, I would say Jake wrote like most, like all of the lyrics for that one. And that song for me changes meaning every time I sing it. It's so different every time. So, I mean, and even the lyrics themselves, like if you listen to them, like they can mean anything to anyone. And that's the cool part about it.
Yeah.
So.
And is like the process feel a lot different as far as Jake's just like writing these lyrics like he's talking about and doesn't always necessarily know where the melodies are going to be because he's like not writing to an instrument necessarily. Mm-hmm. So does that like give you an extra challenge in trying to make those lyrics just work within a melody opposed to maybe something you're writing on keys or guitar where maybe you're forming a melody as you're writing? Yeah,
I don't know. It's honestly fun. Like, think about that. Like, you're like, I love writing melodies. I love writing music. I love, like, it gives me space to like be really creative on that front.
Yeah.
And then have like these lyrics fit in and like create something so incredible in the end. I will say though, like creating with your partner is like hard sometimes. Like we have such a different approach to things, especially writing. And like, I remember this with Heavy for a while, like there were three songs specifically that we like could not finish. And I'm definitely the type to just like, okay, these lyrics are good, like let's just like fit it in and like make this the song. Like this is it. And Jake's like, this doesn't make any sense. Like you can't just like take, like this means something so different than this. I'm like, but it kind of means something, you know, like it works. But I think that's like the beautiful part of working with someone. Like, we both care about it so much. Right. And like in the end, our strengths play together well.
Yeah. What do you feel like there's, it's maybe the creative boundaries are more honest because of the like romantic partnership as well? Like, do you feel like it's easier to be honest with one another, or is it more difficult?
It's easier to be mean. Yeah, because like they will still be there, but like yeah,
it's easier to be
mean. I mean, I say like in general, you could look at us and like I'm probably the meaner one. Jake is the nicest person you've ever met in your life. Like, he's so patient, so kind, and like so talented. Yeah, it's like I would say so rewarding to work with your partner. Like, what we've made, I think, is the best thing that we like have ever made. And we worked so hard on it, like heavy for a while. Like, it was a really heavy time, and like we had each other and music, and we like, we did something really cool.
Yeah. Assuming you made most of this music then during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure was nice to have something to
yeah
attach yourselves to during yeah during that time.
And to do it together, like, I mean, we know each other really well, but we're constantly discovering new things still, and like always will, I'm sure, especially when you're creating something. Like, we both surprise ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about like the creative dynamic helps you like discover new things about your relationship, even maybe?
No, do you have an answer?
I mean, yeah, I think that like the like writing is vulnerability. Like, writing is like trying to put words to something. So I think it like forces you to like think about what you want to say, and it forces you to find a way to say it. So I think that there's like just vulnerability built into it, and trying to like, a lot of times I'm like trying to write songs for Allie, like some of them are like more or less from my perspective, but a lot of times I'm trying to like put myself in Allie's shoes. So yeah, that's like the trying to understand her and what she's feeling and everything is like, yeah, to write the song for somebody else, like it probably wouldn't have the same connection or understanding, but like, yeah, that's, I think that definitely like makes us closer and try and understand and feel what each other feel and everything.
So she's going through something, you're thinking about how you can write about this thing.
Seriously, here. It's so true. It's kind of annoying sometimes. Out of my head.
But yeah, I would imagine that is like helpful in like the communication element of a relationship, when you're constantly like exploring your feelings or one another's feelings through these lyrics.
Yeah.
I will say Jake has a gift, truly. Like, this is my plug for, like, I think he should be writing for more people than just me. Like, he has so much empathy, and truly, like, he'll hear someone's story and he wants to write about like what they're going through. Like, he's always thinking about that for other people. And anyways, that's my plug.
Does it like reveal, I don't know, Allie, like when you're kind of hearing these lyrics for the first time, or like after you've had some time to spend with these lyrics and applying it to song, do you feel like Jake helps reveal things about yourself, even since he is writing from your perspective, that like he helps you see things differently?
Yeah. I mean, he has a very like, Jake's an optimist, you know, he is a hopeful person. Like, I think that he always has that, like that spin on it. Like, he wants to have like an uptick, you know, in anyone's story. Like, he just sees the good no matter what. And I would say like, yeah, I tend to be the opposite, like just expecting the worst, or like really like diving into like my pain and like feeling it and learning from it. And I mean, that's like how I've like survived a lot. But I think now that we've been writing for so long together, it is really Yeah, like I learned a lot from finding, I think that's the whole record, like
the new record.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah, it's heavy,
something so heavy, but like it's not for forever, and like you do have to go through hard things to like really feel the true joy outside of that. Like I think that we've experienced so much freedom and like so much love and so much connection and joy truly, but we had to kind of go through it to get here.
Yeah, I guess you can both answer this question. Where I mean, I think they're even in Gray and all of the tunes you've put out, there does seem like there's a pretty big emotional weight behind it. Yeah. But with the new record, there's a little, it feels angsty at times. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some dark energy rolling through it, and like I absolutely like love it, and
thanks.
You know, no pun intended, like really lean into that type of stuff for sure, and it speaks to me heavy, and I think I have like a pretty emotional response to listening to it.
Yeah.
Where do you feel like that's yeah, where did all that emotion come from with this particular record, and what has it been like kind of processing it through these songs?
Yeah, we moved back to my hometown of New Mexico in 2020, like March of 2020, I think.
Yeah, like February, like weeks before lockdown.
Not knowing obviously what was coming.
Okay.
But I had been like looking forward to moving back to New Mexico for like our whole marriage. Like just, I wanted to be in New Mexico. That's where I thought I was supposed to be. Like I felt this longing to like connect to my Hispanic family. Like my dad is, he died in 2012, and I thought like that if I moved back home, I would feel closer to him, I think.
Okay.
And, cause that's where he lived. That's where like all my memories with him are. And I'm proud of myself, and I have absolutely zero regrets of moving there. And thanks to Jake for like moving there with me. But it was really, really, just so different than what I expected.
Yeah.
It was really hard to truly, truly feel the weight of loss in so many ways. Like, you know, like my own personal experience with my family and my losing my dad and so much of our support system down there, but also like just the contrast with like what was happening in the world at that time. It just felt really important to be honest about how hard it was.
Yeah.
And to let that exist and to recognize it and like hold space for it and let it move through us. So.
Yeah, it was really tough. It felt like when we moved, it was like indefinite. Like that was where we were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it felt like a failure. Like we tried something and it didn't work.
Oh, because that's the thing. Yeah, we made it 2 years and then we moved back to Seattle.
Yeah.
But you got a lot of good songs out.
I know. Yeah. I know.
And that's what we're grateful here for. Yeah. On the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Yes. Allie.
Yeah, all that, like we don't regret moving there. Like yeah. It was like amazing. It was like a really good experience. We really truly feel like more connected as a couple even after that. But what were you gonna say?
But yeah, I think that like no regrets about having done it, and it mm-hmm. was definitely like some of that's a lot of that's record is about like the time being there, and like Monstera about moving away from childhood mm-hmm. friend. Like there was just yeah, there was
the drummer jam,
the yeah. drummer yeah, bummer bummer drummer drummer bummer bummer.
But yeah, it was just like it's kind of you write all these songs not really realizing, you don't see the thread until after you look back at it.
Yeah,
and you're just writing what you're feeling, and then it's like ends up representing a whole season, and mm-hmm. that's kind of yeah, that tough, heavy, but beautiful time yeah. of our life.
I think yeah, exactly, like just overall I think for me, like we both let ourselves just like not be okay for a little bit and like have music be a safe space for us to process that, and we made something cool.
For sure. It makes sense that there's a, I would say, some religious imagery that shows up in the songwriting, you know? Now talking to y'all and like knowing that that is part of the background and like meeting at Bible college, is that where does like spirituality fall into your lives like at this point?
You're looking at me.
or maybe like how is it showing itself through the music, if that's like a more helpful question?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that like it's definitely like not in organized religion anymore.
Yeah.
That's something that we've like talked a little bit about in the record that was on like Flies. That was probably one of the toughest songs to write on the record, and in part because it's like I feel like there's been a nervousness to share some of these songs and like say something like I think spirituality is like still like I think something that we have reverence for, but not in like the context that either of us would have grown up in. To like write a song kind of shitting on the church a little bit and share that with the world was like a kind of a like bold and scary
thing. I would imagine it's like would you say that both of you are still like kind of like in this deconstruction phase that maybe like people refer to it as, or is it kind of like a constant, like I don't know. I grew up going to church. I've had like a lot of conversations with people that have kind of grown up with it and maybe diverted from it and moved away from it, but also still like feel like they have, you know, a lot of spiritual ties, or you know, it's hard. I think it's hard to like shake that lens when you grow up with it, especially even if it's not something that you want to be a part of, like in some organized way, you know, it's hard to just like cut spiritual ties or feel like that is a part of your being if it like made sense in some regards.
My
dad was a pastor growing up, and like I think seeing like he was pretty much the real deal. Like he loved people so much, and like most Sundays I mean, my dad picked me up from school on a Harley, and like he would preach in like jeans and a t-shirt, and like a lot of Sundays he would trick us, the whole congregation, into like, we're not going to be in this church right now. We're going to go do yard work for like all of the neighbors. Like he truly, like I saw a beautiful side of how that could be and how it can really, really like, express love to the world in a beautiful way. And I've also seen the contrast of that, like many, many people being intentionally hurt and manipulated. It's unfortunate that like that all kind of goes under the same umbrella, the same label for something.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And when in reality, like I feel two things at once about it. Like I feel so much gratitude for love and like, you know, so much of my childhood, but I also feel anger, like seeing so many people hurt. And I think, like Flies, like that song on the record, it talks about like everyone's closing their eyes and they won't stop. And in my mind, like what we pictured when we were writing that was just like people in the church, like everyone knows what's happening, like all of this abuse and stuff, and people are closing their eyes to it just because there's not a way to, no one wants to crumble with that, you know? So I'm so thankful to not be in that anymore.
Do you feel like there's, I don't know, some freedom in not attaching yourself to it?
Yeah. I love like the spirituality and like the value that I was given for that, like growing up, but that's what I've kept with me. I feel like, I'm always going to be searching for what that looks like in whatever season we're in.
Yeah, and I mean, if your choice or like what you want is to still have this like relationship with a higher power, it doesn't mm-hmm. change that. Like, no. You still get to have that if you want to have it in whatever form you want to have it in.
Yeah. Like, I hope as humans, like, we're changing and growing and learning all the time and becoming like better versions of ourselves, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, did you like find it really like, I guess this question can apply for both of you. Do you find that like really helpful to get to process something like that through song, even though it does feel incredibly vulnerable? I would imagine that like it's also vulnerable because you're putting this song out into the world, and that means that like maybe it's not as wild for strangers to hear it, but like maybe family or, you know, people that are close that are still in the game, still in the church game.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like, I feel like a lot of the deconstruction and stuff that we've done has been like something that's taken place for a long time now, and we've kind of settled in too. But like, yeah, writing a song like that kind of forces you to like open the closet and look inside and sort through some stuff that you've kind of ignored for a while, and like put like say something about it, or like figure out what it is that you feel or what you want to say. And yeah, it that, like I say, that song like took the most work out of any on the record. And so like personally, and then the whole idea of sharing it and like letting people who maybe think that we're at a different point than we are be like, oh,
this is how you feel.
Yeah, that's definitely gonna happen.
I do think of those like especially when that is your lens for like growing up, that and maybe because it was a part of mine, those that religious imagery that like pops up is like still really powerful in the lyrics too.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, it's a cool element of things for sure. Allie, do you feel like you, as far as you know, you're the one up there actually singing these songs?
Yeah.
So yeah, is it ever hard for you to show yourself in that way, or like thinking about the Mother track?
Yeah,
you know, that song Gray.
Mm-hmm.
And you played that song last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's it like to share a song that is like obviously like deeply personal, but also it's not just sharing something about yourself, it's like sharing something about a relationship with a loved one?
Yeah.
Is that ever hard for you to express in front of a group of people, or like is it not that big of a deal because these people are strangers and they like don't know your mom or your relationship with it? Or
I mean, I think like that song can apply to anybody like that there's not mutual respect with. Like, I think my mom and I have a great relationship now, and it's funny, yeah, like writing a song about like a specific time.
Yeah.
And a specific moment, like I really felt every single word that I said. Like when I wrote that song, it was like the most real that I felt. And now, like, yeah, when I'm singing it at a show, like having to go back to that place that was so painful, it costs something. And I mean, that's the beauty of music though. Like it's such a real moment. It's such a real feeling. So yeah, my mom and I, like, I've sang that in front of her before and she was like, gosh, you wrote one song about our one fight. Like, we have so many good
moments.
This
is what you're documenting.
Yeah, like, why? But that's music. Like, that's, it helps me through that moment, truly.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I truly love my mom. Like, we're good. Hi, mom. Yeah.
So would you say that that's actually a moment of like growth for the relationship when you're putting things out like that? Because it like almost forces you to have this conversation with your mom or a loved one because of this?
Yeah.
Or like, I would imagine that also goes back to what y'all were talking about as far as creating together is like, sometimes I would imagine that you're writing about your feelings like within the romantic relationship too.
Yeah. Do we do that? We haven't written a lot of love songs, I will say.
Well, it doesn't have to be about love. It can be about struggles. So. Yeah, you can be happily married and still have struggles.
I know. No, it's funny. Like, I think our next record probably, like, we want to lean into, like, some happier things. Because, like, we really are happy.
Some ballady love songs.
I mean, maybe not ballady. Like, I don't know what it will look like. But, I mean, there's music, you know, there's joy in music. So much joy. So,
going back to what you were saying about, you know, that tapping into maybe a song like the mother song or mm-hmm. you know, some of these newer songs on the new record, and it like coming at a cost. I'm always curious about, you know, someone's attachment to these songs when they have to play them in the live setting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you feel like sometimes these songs will force you to stay stuck in something, or does it always feel like a good release?
Yeah, it's a release. Like, I mean, that moment exists and you enter into that when you're singing it. And then the next song, you're entering into something completely different. Like, it's just such a journey.
Yeah. And Jake, what's it like for you, even though you're not on stage, you know, playing these sets? Like, what's it like for you, or what are the feelings that you have watching Ali perform these songs that you've written together, or, you know, maybe the songs where you've written all of the lyrics?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal. It's like, it's funny, I get super nervous even though I'm not doing anything. I'm like
nervous
sweating
before the
more
set
than Ali.
Sitting at the merch table. Like,
yeah. But no, it's pretty, I feel like super proud, and it's like pretty surreal to hear, to see something on stage that just started as like words in my head, and then to see them like performed and connecting with people, it's like one of the most rewarding things in my life to see. It's I love it.
Yeah it must be a cool experience to,
to
watch it happen.
Yeah
End Scene is the last track on the record.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite songs on the record.
Aww.
This is very, you know, obviously like a pretty raw tune, but also I think like the capture of it is super stripped down from the rest of the record.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a very cool dynamic to show, and just like feels like it matches the energy of the song really well.
Wow.
I was curious why it was maybe important to keep that song in that form and not like go over the top with the arrangement or the production.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe like some of the other songs on the record get a little more in depth with the production, and that one just kind of seems to live in its own place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like one take. I remember that I wanted to, I had heard it always like bigger. But Nate, our producer, was like adamant. He was like, nah, we're not adding anything.
Yeah. Good job, Nate.
Yeah.
You crushed it, dude. Like, that was the right call for this song.
Yeah. I think it's like so hard to sing that song. Like, it's a very vulnerable song. So I think I was wanting to like lean on other things to help carry it through, but
yeah, I feel like it kind of the chorus from that song is, I don't want to hurt, I don't want to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's kind of like to get so big and then to like summarize everything down so small like that, and like, yeah, for moving away from Ali's childhood home, mm-hmm. and leaving these people, that's like kind of like one of the like quintessential parts of the record and the story that it's telling is, mm-hmm. just that, like, that's like raw and vulnerable and like the one of the like main points of the thing. So I think it's cool that it kind of, the record starts relatively small, gets big, and then ends like that. It's really pretty special.
Yeah, it's definitely a sweet little bookend, that's mm-hmm. for sure. And like, I feel like it's so, I don't know, it just captures the feel of the room and like how, yeah, it just, I think it's one of those tracks when you're listening to it, like it feels like you're in the room,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you can hear the sound of the keys like moving.
Yeah.
and them being like pressed and stuff like that is so cool. Like,
yeah.
I just thought that was like such a killer way to end the record.
Yeah,
you know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've just thought of this just now, but the melody of the, like the piano melody on that song, I wrote when we were still in Seattle, like before we moved back to New Mexico.
Okay.
So it's in a way like a full circle moment, because that we could never find anything for, like, that melody on the piano never fit in anything. Like, that probably would have been on our last record, Gray, like, if we could have fit it in somewhere. And then, yeah, we were just trying to, like, write the last song for Heavy for a while. And that one was, like, we're going to take this from this and, like, this from this. And then they're very unlikely to, like, fit. And if you listen to that song, like, there's zero time signature. Like, it's just exactly, it's so felt. And I absolutely love, it's a very special song.
Yeah, it's a beautiful one. I definitely want to play the episode out with that one.
Oh,
feels like a proper ending, you know, end scene, end of the episode. Also, I was curious if you feel like vocally the guitar and the piano bring out like a lot different things in your vocal delivery.
Yeah, for sure. I think if you listen to Gray, like, that record has quite a bit of reverb on it.
Gray.
Like, yeah.
Available on all the things and vinyl.
Yeah. Thanks. But yeah, there's a lot of reverb on that record, and my vocal feels like very big. But then for Heavy for a While, I think because it's such a, like, it's almost spoken at times, like, it's just like a really honest recounting of exactly what we went through.
Yeah.
And we wanted to strip it back and just keep it really dry and make it feel like you're in the room with me talking and hearing my process, you know.
Yeah.
So and when there's no reverb on a vocal, like, as a singer, you just feel so out there. And I think it allowed me to, like, lean into, like, some really low things and just, like, it just feels, like, really raw.
Yeah. I'm just, like, pretty blown away by the capturing of the vocals. Like, you crushed the singing. Like, for, I don't know, I think it's, like, very, I don't know, you don't always, like, feel like maybe you get all of that emotion, like, captured in the singing of a record. And it just seemed to come through immediately, like, through all the tracks on Heavy for a While, for sure. So
thank you so much.
You did such a killer job of singing in that way. And especially, like you're saying, it's like it's not drowned out in, like, reverb or anything.
No.
You know, it feels like you're often just in the room with you, and it's this very raw emotion being expressed. So
thank you.
Beautiful record. I know I could talk to you for much longer, but I have to let y'all go so you can get back to Seattle for not one, but two shows.
Yeah.
That Byland is playing today. But I appreciate y'all taking the time to chat with me before you
thank
bounce
you
out
so
of here.
Much,
and,
yeah,
like
thank
I said,
you,
it was yeah great to see you play last night. And
thanks.
Excited to see a full band set in the future, and I'll put all the links in the episode notes so people can keep up with the Byland music. Buy yourself some vinyl. Check out the Gray record. Check out the new Heavy for a While record.
Yeah, baby.
Available on all the things. And y'all can deliver this however you like. If you want to do it together, Allie, if you want to do it alone. But we end every episode of the podcast with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which is, it's a program. And it means absolutely nothing. And it's just the way that my grandfather says program. He always says program.
Okay.
And so we just end the episode with the guest saying, it's a program. So if we get the Byland, it's a program, we can properly sail this thing out.
All right. What's your grandpa's name?
His name is Andrew. Dr. Smith.
Is he still here?
He's still here. He's still
what's
here.
What's up, man?
He's still in the game. Yeah, what's up,
Hi,
Grandpa?
Hi, Grandpa. It's a program.
She nailed it, everybody. That's Allie and Jake. It's Byland is the project. And like I said, all the links will be in the episode notes. And we're going to play the episode out with the last track on the new record, Heavy for a While. It is called End Scene. Beautiful song. And that's the Jelly Jams. And we will catch you on the flip side, Portland, Seattle, wherever you are listening from. I don't know why I pointed at the camera. I just feel like it's there now, and I'm supposed to acknowledge it every once in a while. That's the bonus content.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's the paid. That's the Patreon. The Patreon episode with Byland, everybody.
Yeah.
Cool. We did it.